Coming at you from the AO Studios, it's the Fade Route with D and Z. Here are your hosts, D and Z.
Powered by Riverside FM.
Coming at you live from the AO Studio.
You.
It's the Fade Route with D and Z. I am D, and we've got a great show for you tonight. The Mets lose four straight to the Braves. The Boston Celtics are having a fire sale, and Kevin Durant is the newest member of the Houston Rockets. But we'll begin today's show with the NBA season is finally over. The OKC,
just in time for the draft.
The OKC Thunder defeated the Indiana Pacers 103-91. Even though the game was close into the third quarter, the game shifted 7 minutes in when Tyrese Haliburton tore his Achilles and missed the remainder of the game and will likely be out the rest of next year. We were robbed of an epic conclusion of the NBA season, or were the Thunder going to pull this out regardless?
As quietly as it's kept, the Pacers did have a one-point lead at the half. So, were we robbed? We were robbed of potentially a Willis Reed-like performance from Tyrese Haliburton. Like, he gave it a go. Like, he did what he was trying to do. You know, on his X post, he said he would 100 times out of 100 do it again. And in reality, when you think about it,
When you really think about it,
he was in a no-win situation. If you don't play, you're soft. If you do play and you get hurt, well, what the fuck did you play for? So he kind of had to give it a go. And, you know, guy left it all on the court. It's exactly what you hope for, you know? I mean, best case scenario, he made it out of it unscathed, but if you're going to go out leaving it on the floor. And think about Kobe. He went, took his free throws, and then hobbled off. Right? Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum, Damian Lillard. Those two, plus Haliburton, that all happened this year.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
We need to really start thinking about, and it's a little bit tangential, but, you know, people are calling for a shorter NBA season now that all these guys are getting ACL and Achilles tears. Maybe they need to alter training. Because if they're not going to shorten the season, they need to figure out how to change their training habits so that they're not rupturing Achilles and ACLs.
Yeah.
Right? You somehow have to figure out how to minimize that, because they're going to keep playing in the Olympics. They're going to keep playing in FIBA. They're going to keep playing, you know, deep into the postseason. So were we robbed? No. It was no guarantee the Thunder was going to win this. You know, the Pacers came to play. Mm-hmm. The Pacers were ready to go, and they took a little bit of motivation from trying to, you know, win one for Haliburton.
Mm.
But in that third quarter, they just got mugged.
Blitzed.
The turnover machine was there. And that's all you need to know. Like, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had one turnover in the entire game. They seemed to turn over the Pacers at will in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their move, you know? Like, Daniel makes adjustments. He's a good coach. He's a really good adjustment coach. And, you know, kudos to the Pacers for still putting up a fight. Mm-hmm. But when your best player goes out, and then all you have to do is key in on Pascal Siakam, like, that's it. Like, it was a wrap. But were we cheated? No. I would say that this was a compelling... It ended up being a very compelling series.
Mm.
All things being equal. I think that the league should be happy about the result. They should be happy about the length of the series. They should be... They're trending in the right direction. I think they would be okay with. They should be okay with this series.
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk. I'll talk about Haliburton in our next and in our next segment. I have opposite feelings of you, surprisingly. But I'm going to stick with what happened. I mean, Z, I feel like the injury just took all the wind out of the game. Like, you know, the celebration. I understand that the Pacers fought diligently for basically 2.5 quarters, but I turned off. It's not what I wanted to see. I didn't want to see this guy on the floor in pain and was this guy hurt. And to me, it took all the wind out of the game for me because it no longer, like, this was game 7. You know, you had the most overrated player in the league getting, you know, getting his team to game 7, an inferior team against Goliath, the better team. And 7 minutes into the game, the best player on the Pacers goes down. And it's just like, ugh. Like, it just, I didn't care anymore. See, I can't remember a time. Actually, there's one other time where usually, you know, when the champion wins, you think, oh my gosh, what an accomplishment. This was a great victory. All these players were great. They had a great season. And this was probably only the second time in my life that my thoughts were in the losing locker room about, like, the Pacers. Like, and I was thinking about what happened to them in this series, this season, this playoff, right? And the only other time this happened was when the Pistons beat the Lakers, because the talk was, oh, that's it for Shaq and Kobe. They're breaking this thing up. This is the end of that dynasty. This is the end of that era. Phil is not coming back. Like, that was the only other time I can remember where I was thinking about the team that lost instead of the team that won. And that's really what happened in this series. Like, you know, I didn't want to watch this B team. I wanted to watch A versus A, your best against my best. It's not like the Thunder were dealing with any injuries, and, you know, they were, you know, rightfully so, they were painting their buses before the game started because they knew they were going to win, right? They did. They knew Halliburton was hurt. There was no way they were going to lose in their building. They had confidence. They were ready to go, and they stuck to their game. I mean, you think about this team, and it's like, oh, they're young and they'll be back. Well, you know what? We thought Harden and Durant and Westbrook were young and we're going to be back. And then what happens, Zeke? Everybody want to get paid, right? So it's like, you know, it's all about getting that ring, right? Once you get that ring, okay, I got my ring. Now I want to get paid. So who are they going to pay? They're going to pay SGA, and they're going to have to either pay Chet or they're going to have to pay Williams. I'd pay Williams, right. And I'd send Chet on his way, and I'd trade everybody else. I mean, that's basically what's going to happen here. And then you're going to roll the dice. To me, this season was a weakened season, especially in the East. You had, like you talked about it, you had Dame go down, you had Tatum go down, you had Butler blow up the Heat. Like, this was a year for any Eastern Conference team to get to the finals. And in the West, you know, it took them 7 games. It took them 7 games to beat the Pacers, even with Halliburton hurt. It took them 7 games to beat the Nuggets. I think it took them 7 games to beat the team they played in the first round, too. Like, this wasn't just a walk in the park for the Thunder. And you also got to wonder, well, you know, everybody else is going to be back. We're going to talk Houston just got better. You're going to think the Nuggets are going to come back. You're going to think that the Clippers are coming back. Like, the West is a tougher conference. So I don't know if Oklahoma City Thunder is going to come back. I think they're going to be a good team for a few more years. But again, you're talking about a guy in Sam Presti that just happened to push all the right buttons, trading Paul George, getting all these draft picks, sucking for really the last 2-3 years, and finally with the SGA, who was a throw-in in the trade for Paul George, becomes your guy. This was a guy that, you know, didn't get drafted in the first 5 picks. I think he originally got drafted by Charlotte, and then he got moved to the Clippers, and then moved to the Thunder. You know, this was an art in general management. This was an art in trading. This was the art in putting a team together. Hats off to the Thunder for their victory. But for me, this is a forgettable finals. It wasn't exciting. It wasn't riveting. Really, once Halliburton got hurt, I think it was in game 5, who knew what was going to happen?
I liken it, you know, I really do liken it to last year with Jalen Brunson. Once he went down, the wind went out of the sails.
Absolutely. Your best player just went down. And then he's not. And then the other part, which I thought was not smart of them, was he stayed in the locker room. I think it would have been more uplifting if he was out there, even if he was on crutches in a wheelchair or whatever. To see him there would have been more motivating than watching him go down, get carried away, and you don't see him again. You know, and in that, maybe even if he came out in the third quarter and the fourth quarter to kind of rile his guys, I think it would have been more uplifting. But you could see they were punched in the gut, they're punched in the stomach, the sail was gone. And come the third quarter, the blitz was on. And really, the Thunder never looked back. But switching over to the losing locker room, Tyrese Haliburton will miss all of next season as he recovers from a torn Achilles. Haliburton played the last three games with a strained calf, and they lost two of them. So do we applaud his bravery for playing hurt or condemn him because the Pacers lost and he will now miss all of next season?
Well, like I said before, I don't think he had a choice. I think he had to play in some sort of capacity.
Yeah, I mean, so this is where I disagree with you. Because in your scenario, what you're saying is you're painting a win-win for him, really. And this is why you're painting a win-win. Because you're saying, okay, play hurt, right? And if you win, you played hurt, you're the hero. And play hurt, and you know what? If you do get hurt and you have to miss all of next season, and you probably will never be the same again, you still gave it your best effort. That's a win-win. I think the dynamic would have been different, Z, if he strained his calf in game six and then he played in game seven. But he's played three games with a strained calf. That's stupid, Holmes. That's just stupid. I'm sorry. If you're going to give it a go for one game, yes, 100%, put the pain aside, be a man, be an athlete, be a player, be the best player on your team, go out there and do it. You broke your finger, you hurt your wrist, you sprained your calf, whatever. For one game, yes. This was the third game, my man. You were pushing this thing to the limit. And the second part is that if we know you have a strained calf and you're hurt, and what's on the line here? Because what I've been told is he was very well aware of what could happen to his Achilles. Let's play this differently, okay? You're not going to start. You're going to come off the bench. And when you're in, we're playing zone defense. And you, my friend, are going to be a spot-up shooter. I don't want you dribbling at the top of the key. I don't want you pushing hard off that calf. I don't want you doing anything to put more strain on your Achilles and your calf. Be a spot-up. Come off screens. Take your shot at the foul line. You want to come off the screen, catch the ball, and go all the way to the basket all in one motion and do your little floaty layup? Yes. But the whole, I'm going to have the ball at the top of the key, I'm going to dribble, 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 and then drive and try to go by guys, that's just a recipe for disaster. That's not what a person with a strained calf should be doing. And you could look at Kevin Durant, you could look at Dame Lillard, all those guys had strained calves and then tried to play early and pop their Achilles. I'm not going to say he's stupid, because that's not the right word. I think the organization should have been smarter about going about this. When he got hurt in game four or whenever he got hurt, say, okay, you're hurt. You got two options here. We can go and play you in the next game, and when we play you in the next game, we're going to do it cautiously, or you're going to rest until we really, really need you for game seven. And that is the approach that the organization should have took. See, he's hurt for all of next year. And then when he does come back, he's coming back to a different team. These guys aren't all going to be there. And I don't know what he's going to even look like. And I don't think you throw that away for the third game of trying to do this. One game, yes. Two games is stretching it. Three games, no way.
He's painted in a corner because it was game seven. And because they had no choice but to play to get to game seven, right? He had no choice. Because if he sits, they go home in six. And then he's getting crushed. So that's the thing.
Yeah.
As much as you want to talk about it on the X and O side, it's a failure of management by Rick Carlisle, and it's a failure of management by that. Right. I understand that. In the court of public opinion, there was no goddamn way that he would have been able to live this down.
I think you go back and you can paint the picture of what happened to all these players this year. This year, in this playoffs, it happened to two guys. Like, you can just go and paint it into that. And that's what you hang your hat on. And if you're in an organization, you're the ones that come out and say, you know what? We decided it was in our best interest and his best interest that he wouldn't push it more than one game. And we pushed it in game six. We pushed it in game five. Or we're saving him for game seven. We're trying to get that calf ready to be able to play. And you don't put it in his court. He doesn't get to make that decision. Because he's not making a rational decision. He's a player. He's a star. That's what he wants to do. Like, he's going to be out there for his team. And he can say it. Come out and say that we are not letting him play. Yeah. We are not letting him play.
All right, you're Rick Carlisle. You take this strategy, the Thunder win in six. You're getting crucified by your fans. You're getting crucified by the media. You're getting crucified by, you know, other former players and coaches. You can put your head on the pillow and sleep.
I'm going to put my head on the pillow saying we did what was best for the player. He had a strained calf, and we've seen what happens with strained calves. He could have popped his Achilles, and I would have lost him for all of next year, and it really couldn't risk it. We listened to our doctors. We listened to our team physicians, and we based it off the history of these kind of injuries. And I can absolutely sleep like that because I know next year we are going to be back. He's going to be healthier. We're going to be hungrier. We've been hungry the last 2 years. Now he finally got to the finals. And that, absolutely, no problem with that. Because at the end of the day, Rick Carlisle knows. He knows what he's going up against. He knows that he can't beat the Thunder. He knows that. He's not stupid. And I think you put yourself in a position where now next year is lost. You can say all those things right now about like how they feel and they wouldn't trade it for anything. Yeah, well, next year when you're under 500 and you're not even in the play-in game, was it worth it? No, I don't think so. I don't think so at all. Man, so.
You're in a unique opportunity. You have a unique opportunity here to keep the ship going. You are in a weak East because we're going to talk about Boston. Right?
Yeah.
Boston's gutting their organization.
Right.
The Cavs, I don't believe in the Cavs. Sorry, I don't believe in the Cavs. The Cavs bubbled up, they can bubble right back down. The Knicks are in flux. Like, we've been talking about the Knicks for fucking weeks. Right? The Sixers are the Sixers. I don't believe in the Sixers either. We live in a world where this compromised Pacer team could still be number one or number two in the Eastern Conference.
Okay, so even taking that perspective, doesn't that make you feel a little different about playing your best player three games in a row on a strained calf? That's a bad calf?
Why do we play? We play to win the game.
But he's not the only guy on the team. I'm not knocking the guy for playing hurt. And I want that to be understood. I'm not. I appreciate his effort and, you know, absolutely. But sometimes you got to save players from themselves. And coming out there on a strained calf three games in a row, it's not smart. If it's for one game, one quarter, one half, yes, but not three games. And he played hurt for three fucking games. And what, game seven, pop. But game seven.
We talked about it. Like, you know, I was watching The Last Dance last night. And when Michael Jordan had a twisted ankle, they put him on a minutes restriction. He was only allowed to play 7 minutes a quarter. So there were ways around this.
Yes.
Like, he didn't need to start.
Right.
He didn't
need
to start.
That's exactly what I'm saying, Z. Like, and let's play zone defense when he's in. Let's not make him have to, you know, guard people and run around and chase people and sprint and have to jerk and whatever or jump. And then on offense, get the ball out of his hands. He's now a spot-up shooter where he's coming around screens where he can come, catch, go to the basket, and do his floater. That's it. No dancing at the top of the key. You can't dance, dude. And push off your weak leg? Come on, man. It's not smart. That's all I'm trying to say, Z. It's just not smart. That's not – if you – acted like he didn't have an injury instead of maybe masking it, hiding it, or protecting him. Protect the player. Let's be smart about what we're doing here. You know, it's not like we don't have an idea. It's not like Rick Carlisle isn't creative and can't come up with ways. And like you said, minutes restriction, not start, come in at the 10-minute mark, play 5 minutes, like be our jump starter, because our team's going to play better when you're on the court.
Willis Reed.
Right, right. Even Willis came in, hit his two shots. It's like, all right, I'm out.
That's it. All they had to do was be Willis Reed.
Right. And you tried to be a superhero. You tried to be a Superman. And now that franchise is done for the next 2 years. But Game 7 of the NBA Finals was the most watched Finals game in 6 years. So is that a big deal, a little deal, or no deal?
Considering the two markets that were in this and considering the level of star that was in this, that's a huge deal. That's a huge win. It's not LeBron. It's not Giannis.
Curry.
It's not Steph. It's not KD. It's not that level, right? It's not that echelon. Like, this is SGA. SGA, who's coming into his own, right? He won the MVP. He won the Finals MVP. Like, this is his moment, right? Tyrese Halliburton came into this as the villain, or trying to be the villain. And, like, this was it, right? I think he was trying.
I feel like people thought of him as almost like the hero, almost, because of everyone thinking he was the most overrated player. And he came in and he was, you know, willing his team. You don't think it was mixed feelings on that? Maybe in New York, everybody thought he was the villain. I feel like there was mixed feelings on him.
Well, he is a likable guy when he's not trying to be Reggie Miller. And that's the problem. He's derivative. Like, we went over this last week. He's trying to be somebody he doesn't need to be.
Mm-hmm.
There's one Reggie Miller. We don't need another one. We don't need another prissy little jump shooter. Like, sorry. No. I'm good. I'm good with one Reggie Miller. When he's not trying to be Reggie Miller, he's actually a quite likable guy. So, when you take all of that into account, that's a big win for the NBA, because people tuned in for the basketball. They tuned in for the product. Right? We've been talking about how this is a sizzle, not a steak leak. We've been talking about that for years. Right? They sell you on the superstar, but then they don't really want you to look at the play. They don't want to pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Look at all of these wonderful stars. Look at how fantastic they are. Oh my goodness, it's Jimmy Butler and Steph Curry and Jalen Brunson and this dog shit product that we got going on. No, don't worry about that. Look at all the shiny toys. Look at all these shiny objects. And this was the moment. This was the absolute moment where you had two extremely talented teams who can play on both sides, and it's been a knocky-draggy. It's been a back-and-forth series, and that's all you could ask for, because if it was the gentleman's sweep, we would have been talking about how terrible that was, right? It needed to go seven. It needed to be a series of attrition. And, I mean, Tyrese Halliburton didn't make it out of the series. But if you, at the beginning of the series, signed up for it exactly as it went down, I think you're fine with that. So, big deal, big deal, big deal.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal from a different standpoint. I think it's a big deal because it should show the NBA now that you do not need to fix lotteries. You don't need to fix games. You can let things play out and it could work to your advantage. I think you had the Thunder come into this with a young team, young stars, unknown stars, not fancy play. They're not throwing oops to each other. They run an offense and, you know, their best player is like a 90s player where he's going to the basket, he's taking mid-range jump shots, he doesn't turn the ball over, he plays a clean game, you know, and it's something that they they haven't had in a while, right? Because you had Miami with the Monstars, then you had Cleveland with the three-headed monster, and then you had, you know, Steph and Clay, the Splash Brothers, splashing threes. So this was like, this was a way to show the NBA that, okay, a team from Indiana and a team from Oklahoma City could attract viewers, could attract, you know, an audience. So I hope that that's what the NBA got out of this. So that's why I think it's a big deal. As far as the series was concerned, to me, Z, it was a shit series. It was a shit series because you had their best play, the Pacers' best player get hurt in game five, play two and 7 minutes of a game with hurt. And then really the Thunder were the better team from jump. I'm not going to say the Pacers got lucky in game one, but the Pacers stole a game in game one. And that made it intriguing. The Thunder came back with fury in game two, right? And so on and so forth. So to me, it was a shit series. I did not watch game seven. I watched the first 7 minutes. And once he got hurt, I was out. And there really weren't, I mean, there was ups, there were ebbs and flows in games, but most of the games, I think, were double-digit victories. I think there was only really one or two of them that was within single digits, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to go and look.
Yeah, but if you're looking at double digits, I mean, think about the NBA. Think about the way basketball is scored. That really is just a matter of single-digit number of shots. Like, that's relatively close. It's not like you're talking about 30 points. Mm. You're talking, I mean, 15 points can be made up in five shots, especially with the level of sharpshooting in the NBA today. I mean, look at what happened with the Knicks in game one, right? Oh, we're comfortable. Got this in the bag. And the next thing you know, shit, we're in overtime. How the hell did that happen?
Shit.
God damn it. Shit. Motherfucker. But, you know, that's the nature of the beast in the NBA.
Right. Like, so the first game was a one-point victory. Second game was 16 points. Then it was 9 points. Then it was 7 points. 11 points. 17 points, 12 points.
Yeah, so 16, 17 were the ones that are a little out of reach. Everything else, even the 12-pointer, we saw the Pacers come back from a 12-point deficit. So we seen it with our own eyes.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. I would say there's ebbs and flows. I would say that back and forth is what you're looking for. I mean, think about it. Think about it like MMA or in boxing. Would you want them just swinging for the, you know, for the knockout? No. Eventually, you know, you want to trade a little bit. You want a good compelling fight is one where they're trading and it's a competitive fight. And at the end of the day, like, they won on points, right? This would be like, it's more of like a decision than a knockout.
They were outplayed. Right? I mean, I think we walk away from this knowing the Oklahoma City Thunder were a better team, right?
Walk away from this knowing that Mark Daniels is a really good coach. Like, he went toe to toe and adjusted with Rick Carlisle.
I don't know about that. I'm not going to go that length because I do think that the reason why the Pacers did so well was because of their coach. And because in the first three or four games, Rick Carlisle had the Oklahoma City Thunder reacting instead of dictating,
which was the second half, which is the mark of a good coach. The adjustments were made, and the defense was able to stifle the Pacers.
They were
able to force those turnovers because of the halftime adjustments.
You can have that outlook on it. My outlook on it would be that in the second half, the best player in the league took over, almost like a LeBron, where put the team on his back, got players in position to make shots, went to the basket, scored, like played like he got warmed up. He got warmed up in that first
That's
half.
That's fair, but he's not forcing half. He's not forcing 23 turnovers. Not by himself.
Well,
you got to give Lou Dort some credit. You got to give Holmgren credit. They play defense.
The person I'd give the most credit to is Presti. Right?
He put the team together, yeah.
So he's the person that I would say, you know, he got a Dort and he got Chet and he didn't give up on those guys. And Williams had a great year. So that's where I'd go to. And then I'd go to the players, and then I'd go to their coach. I don't think he's in Udoka. I don't think he's a Popovich. He's not a bad coach. He's a good coach, but you know, I think if Rick Carlisle was coaching the Thunder, the series would have been over in four games. Let's put it that way. Like, you know, the fact that, you know, that the Pacers had Rick Carlisle gave them a chance. And even when their best player was hurt, they still competed at a high level.
And then they got snuffed out by the Thunder.
And then they got snuffed out by the Thunder.
Avoid messy accidents. Get better stopping power with your brake pads. Callahan brake pads. You never know when you'll be driving in the road and there will be a truck tire that you need to avoid and save your family. Callahan Auto. We really care about what's under your hood.
But the NBA is top of the line story today, Z. So now we move into trades. The Suns were able to trade Kevin Durant to the Houston Rockets on Sunday at FanFest. While he was at Fanatics Fest, he got traded. The Suns received Dylan Brooks, Jalen Green, the 10th overall pick in this year's draft, and a bucket full of second round picks. I think five, actually. Kevin Durant is 37 years old, Z. So was this a smart play by the Rockets?
If you felt that Kevin Durant was the guy you need to get you to the next level, which they clearly think he is.
Is that what you think?
No.
Oh.
Okay. My feelings on Kevin Durant are, once again, well documented. He, like Aaron Rodgers, if he's interested in joining your organization, you politely decline. You say, no thank you, sir. But Jalen Green's 23 years old, averaged 21-5-3 last year. You got something back, right? Dylan Brooks is an irritant. He's probably going to get traded. He's probably going to get flipped
about,
at the deadline.
You're talking about from the Suns' perspective?
I'm talking about from the Suns' perspective.
Oh, God, they're fucking done. Oh, God.
I mean, having Jalen Green makes this more palatable. Getting those 5 second-round picks, because 5 second-round picks are going in trades like crazy. Like 4, 5, 6 second-round picks.
It doesn't mean anything.
Tell that to Nikola Jokic. Tell that to Jalen Brunson before we start having Wilbon's idea. Tony Kornheiser's idea about second-round picks being used.
Jeez.
So every once in a while, Draymond Green, I think, was a second-round pick. So they eventually, sometimes you do get some value out of them. But this is really, I mean, they wanted Jalen Green. They had to figure out a way to get Jalen Green. They got a 23-year-old scorer. Now, what does that mean for their team? Who got? Because they got Bradley Beal on that team, and they're not going to win anything.
Right. Well, I think they added another guard, Z. They don't need another guard. The fact that the Rockets were able to get this deal done and they didn't have to deal Jabari Smith, home run. Because to me, if I was the Suns, that's the guy. I need him. You keep all the fucking second round picks. I need Jabari Smith. I need that guy. Because now I get a forward. All you do now is you just have a bunch of guards. I mean, I gotta imagine they're going to flip Green. I can't imagine they keep him. Because you don't need the guards. You got guards. You got Booker and Beal. They're two guards.
Unless you're flipping Booker, because Jalen Green is 23.
Okay, yeah. Unless you want to flip Booker and you're gonna build
buy
around...
out Beal. You have to buy him.
No,
out. You
no,
can't
you,
keep him.
No. You have to keep him. You have to keep him and make him play. But then
get out there, you son of a bitch.
So then, what are you doing? You're building around Green. If you deal Booker,
whatever you're getting back from Booker, because you need assets from that trade.
I don't know if Booker is gonna get. I don't know what he's going to fetch. I don't know. But to me, that's, you know, the Rockets. So my outlook on this is
they need to get younger, better, and cheaper. That's what the Suns need to do.
Here's my thing with the Rockets, though. It's like, to me, Thompson and Green were the same player. Thompson was the better player. A lot of people might disagree with me on that, but watching Amen Thompson play, He's consistent. He scores every night. There were times in this playoffs where Green disappeared. Had no points, 6 points, 9 points. Like, dude, you can't be a top five pick and disappear like that. So I'm fine with him leaving. And as far as Kevin Durant coming in, Kevin Durant just has to know his role. You're our closer, dude. Because the problem Houston had this year as a two seed in this playoff was that they didn't have a closer. They didn't have a guy that could get him a bucket. Kevin Durant may be 37 years old, but he's a walking bucket. Like, he can hit it from anywhere on the court. So as long as Kevin Durant knows what his role is on this team, I'm fine with it. I don't think they're going to win a championship. They'll definitely get out of the first round, and then anything can happen. And I think they have a really good coach in Udoka. And you got to keep Jabari Smith. To me, that was the biggest thing. I'm not in love with them giving up the 10th pick, but I mean, you had to give Phoenix something for this. You know, there was a report that the Knicks came in late and they were offering Mitchell Robinson and OG Anunoby. Or at least that's what Phoenix wanted. That to me would have been more appealing. I just like the Phoenix Suns are a lot like the Indiana Pacers. You stick a fork in them, they're going to be done for a couple of years because you don't have it. You don't have anybody to compete. You don't have any players. If you couldn't win with Beal, Booker, and Durant, you're not winning with Green, Booker, and Beal. You're not winning with Dylan Brooks, Green, Booker, and Beal. The West is as tough as it can come. You're better off doing what Sam Presti did and fucking fire sale everybody. Get whatever you can for them. First round picks, really, is what you're looking for, even if they're in the future. And you're just rolling the dice because you're not winning. You couldn't even get in the play-in game, man.
You're not getting jack shit for Bradley Beal.
No,
you're not getting jack shit for it.
You can't trade Bradley Beal. Forget about that. Bradley Beal's staying here. Like, he's staying here. That is the most untradeable contract in professional sports. I think they said something like there's two people in the NBA that have a no trade clause, and that's Bradley Beal and fucking LeBron James.
Right. Which one of these is not like the other?
Right. I think Kevin Durant might have one too, but because I heard Kevin Durant nixed the trade to the Warriors in the middle of the season. He nixed the trade to the Timberwolves last week, and then the Rockets came, and he was like, all right, I'll go to Houston.
They have – the Rockets – I mean, the Suns, rather, have absolutely nothing on their roster. You have Grayson Allen. You have Bol Bol. You have Ryan Dunn. You have Colin Gillespie. You have Tyus Jones, who's a decent point guard, but I believe he's a free agent. So he might be out of there. So you got Booker. But you need to get rid of Booker. Like, you need to revamp this roster because they're mediocre at best. And then they're also sneaky old. Beal's 31. Grayson Allen's 29. I feel like he was just tripping people at Duke. He's 29. I mean, Damian Lee is on this team. He's 32. Mitchich is 31. O'Neal is 32. Mason Plumlee's 35. You have a lot of old, mediocre to bad players on this team. Ishbia, you know, he went and tried to construct a fantasy roster and that bit him in the ass. But if you look at the Rockets roster, it's not that much better. It's not that much better. You know, you have Steven Adams. Okay. Like, he's going to keep the fire going that Dylan Brooks had. You got Van Vliet's a free agent, so I don't know if he's coming back. I'm sure they would love to have him back, but I don't think they're. I don't know if he's going to stay.
Reports are that Kyrie Irving declined his option with the Mavericks, his $43 million option.
So is that the play? KD and Kyrie in Houston. Interesting. But yeah, I mean, Thompson is intriguing. Only 14 points per game, so you know, there's room to grow. Smith, 12 points per game. Room to grow. So,
I mean, this team was the 2 seed this year.
This team was the 2 seed, but I would argue that it's a pretty weak two seed. Yeah. If you look at the roster as constructed, it's just like
they played as a team.
Yeah.
They played as a team.
They are the Pacers. The Pacers also played as a team, but their star, their closer, was better than the closer on the Rockets.
That's fair. But now the Rockets have
Now they have the closer. They have
the closer.
Yeah, they have Billy Wagner now. Right. So let's see. Kevin Durant also needs to fit in with this team. Yes, he's back with Udoka, but he has to make it work. He can't be Mr. Chasing Experiences and pout and want out when shit doesn't go his way. Because inevitably, it's not going to go his way. That's just how life works. Like, it's not going to be what he's hoping. This roster falls short. Now, whether or not Van Vliet leaves and they bring in Kyrie, that's a different story. It's starting to look a little bit better. It looks a little bit better. But right now, it's an incomplete. I mean, I don't like Kevin Durant. Like, I respect him. I don't like him. I respect him, but I don't like him. The Rockets needed to get better somehow, and if this is how they feel they're going to get better, then this is who am I to say that they're not going to get better?
So would you say this was a smart play by the Rockets?
They needed something. Could they have gotten?
I don't think the number 10 pick in the draft was going to be able to be a closer.
Could they have gotten Giannis for?
I'm sure they floated it. I'm sure they floated it, but I don't think. Yeah, sure they floated it, and maybe the Bucks said no. The Bucks wanted Jabari Smith, and that's why they're like,
that's
no.
That's the thing, though. That would have been redundant, because they're both power forwards. So...
Yeah, but Jabari Smith's younger, and he's very good.
You have to give to get.
I think Durant's a better closer than Giannis. But,
They need shooting, and he provides shooting. Giannis doesn't provide shooting. He's a bully.
The Suns were not the only team that was on the trading block today. The Boston Celtics are starting their fire sale, Z. They're starting their fire sale. So, first off, they make a trade with the Blazers. They send Drew Holiday there for Anthony Simmons and two future second round picks. Next, just before we came on the air today, they traded Porzingis to the Atlanta Hawks in exchange for George's Niang and the Cavs 2031 second round pick. The 2031 second round pick, which is 6 years from now.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, Z, what other dominoes do you see will fall? And do you think it was smart by the Celtics to deal Drew Holiday and Porzingis?
Well, we also have to talk about the CJ McCollum trade, because CJ McCollum got moved to the Wizards. So you have McCollum, Olynyk, and a second rounder for Jordan Poole, Sadiq Bey, and the number 40 pick.
So Wizards just got older?
I think the Wizards got better, because you have Middleton. You have Marcus Smart, you have CJ McCollum. You have three quality players. Are they stars? No. But are they damn solid NBA professionals? Yes. And Washington has been lacking in the solid-ass NBA professional basketball players for years. So, the Pelicans got worse. The Wizards got better. I would argue that the Wizards are like hovering around the periphery of the play-in with this move. So, still under 500, but closer to 10. Good job. To me, this is about the Brooklyn Nets, man. Like, we'll talk about the Celtics in a second because of all the picks they have tomorrow night. Yes. Well, we'll talk about the Celtics in a second, but we have to take into account that the Brooklyn Nets have five first-round picks. five, cinco, and one of them is in the lottery. So they have the ammunition if they want to move up in this draft, if there's somebody that they covet, or if there's a certain star, like, say, Mr. Antetokounmpo, if they wanted to pry him from Milwaukee, how would three first-round picks do you? That sound good? We'll start with that? Okay. What other disgruntled superstars, what other disgruntled alleged superstars are there? There's also a rumor that RJ Barrett might be getting flipped. So RJ in a first to Brooklyn. Maybe not a first this year. Because six first-round picks, that's too fucking... A third of the first round would be the Brooklyn Nets. But, that's some pretty good GMing right there on that part. You're accumulating draft capital. You're Prestying. You're Sam Prestying. And that's what's going on. You have Georgie Yang and a second rounder of the Celtics. Okay, fine, whatever. 9-3-1. Okay. Doesn't really do anything for me, but whatever. He's 32 years old, so not exactly getting younger there. But this is a punt. They're punting. Like, what can you say? And teams are very interested on Jaylen Brown, right? Tatum's done. Porzingis is gone. Drew Holiday is gone. Anthony Simons is not the, but he's going to carry the team. He averaged 21 last year, but he ain't going to carry the team.
No, but the good thing about him is he's younger, right? Yeah. He's cheaper. That's what that's all about, Z.
Yeah.
There's reports that Drew Holiday is already unhappy with this, which, not a surprise.
This is the second time that he's been traded to the Blazers.
He's $100 million man.
If you got traded to the Blazers twice, you'd be unhappy too. So he's owed a shit ton of money. That's true. Like, I floated that you were not plussed with the idea that I sent you earlier, the idea of the Knicks getting in and acquiring Drew Holiday. But I don't know. I just got a feeling that he's going to get flipped to a contender. Now the question is, which contender is it? The Rockets now need a point guard. Maybe it's the Rockets. Maybe who can put together the better package? The Knicks have no draft capital.
They usually play with Thompson running the point, or Van Fleet running the point.
Yeah, well, Van Fleet's a free agent. Yeah. So if it doesn't cost you that much, it only cost Anthony Simons in a second. Wait, what? You're telling me you can't pull a similar kind of thing? I don't know. I think it's possible if you're the Rockets, but if we just found out about Kyrie, if you're given the choice between Drew Holiday and Kyrie, I think you're taking Kyrie.
Yeah, it's just interesting. This team is 1 year removed from being the champion, and it's over. It's over. They're doing what I said they should have did 3 years ago, and they just happened to win their championship again against a weaker opponent. They were able to, finesse their way into the championship and just really just got hot at the right time. But,
they got their ring, so this is fine.
I mean, I'm a Drew Holiday fan. I've always been one. I think he's a very solid player. I think he plays good he plays good to elite defense, and he scores. This guy Anthony Simons they got, he's just a scorer. He don't really play defense, so that's not really going to do much for them there. But this was just about a salary dump, right, Z? I mean, that's basically what this was. I am 100% on board with dealing Porzingis because he's always hurt. He has some kind of injury now or illness now that they don't even know what's wrong with him. So it's like, no, we don't need to borrow that. And I do think Jaylen Brown is the next guy. He's got to go because you're punting on next season. You're not going to compete next season. You're going to be like the Pacers next season. So let's not even fool ourselves in thinking we're going to compete. Let's sell while our chips are high and they're not hurt. And Jaylen Brown's the guy. I'm sure there's a lot of teams that'd be interested in him. And you want draft picks. I mean, you're going to hope that Tatum comes back in 26. Close to what he was. And you're going to roll with that, right?
Yeah. Well, welcome to Brooklyn, Jaylen Brown.
It just seems like the NBA, a lot of the teams kind of get it now, right? Like, if my star player is hurt or is going to be out, I'm not going to try to makeshift this shit. I'm punting. I'm starting over, right? And it seems like that's what a lot of teams have gotten the memo on. You know, you have Boston doing it. You have the Mavericks realizing, hey, we're not going to win a championship with Luka. We just don't think we are. Fuck it. Drop him. That's it. You know, and I think that's what a lot of teams are doing, is they're realizing how good they really are, and they're just, you know, they're rolling with that.
It's extremely short-sighted. And if you're just going to keep doing that, there is no reason to have any sort of, you know, connection to any team in the league. So it is not for fucking long. Like, who, you know, why am I going to bother? Because the laundry is going to be here, but everybody else is going to be different. It's ridiculous. Now, I mean, all you're doing is that's building up that treadmill of mediocrity, right? That hamster wheel of, we'll be all right for like 2 years, and then we're going to suck for four, and then we'll bubble up for one. No. Like that.
If you're the Miami Heat, are you trying to get Giannis now?
They're trying to trade Bam Adebayo, so I don't think so.
So they're selling, you know, too.
They should have broken. Well, that's the thing. Their window closed, and then Jimmy slammed it shut. Their window was closing, and Jimmy slammed it shut. Now you have teams that hang on too long.
You got Tyler Hero making like $100 million.
Yeah. But then you have teams that, like the Hawks, who never come together. Now, instead of trading Trae Young, which would make sense, now they're going to bring in Porzingis. They should have... It wasn't working. You know, some things aren't working. You're just beating your head against the wall. Trae Young is not working in Atlanta. Send him to Brooklyn. They have multiple first-round picks for you. Like, that's the thing. Like, they can have anybody they want because they have the draft capital. Send him to Oklahoma City. Send him anywhere. Like, that's the thing. That's the play. But what's different between the Boston scenario and the Atlanta scenario is that it never worked in Atlanta. Like, Boston's a perennial contender, and they were a champion just last year. They could have had another crack at this. They could have had one more year. Dealing Porzingis means nothing.
If Tatum wasn't hurt, yes.
Yeah, so they're missing Tatum and Brown one more shot in 26-27. I think that's fine. I think they would be okay with that. The Cavs,
maybe.
You can't deal with the Cavs. The Knicks are probably, their window is closing, unfortunately. Their best opportunity is this season, this coming season, because of what's going on. And if it does not happen after that, then we can say it's closed. But I don't know. Like, teams are either getting out too early, or they're holding on too late. Like, that's the issue I'm having.
Step outside of your safe area and make a statement without saying much. With FCK Clout Lifestyle Apparel. Embrace the colorful chaos and stay emotionally regulated in their graphic tees, hoodies, snapbacks, accessories, and more. Go to fckclout.com today and check out current season and past season merchandise for men and women. Get it while you can. That's fckclout.com. Check them out today. fckclout.com.
But you know what the other issue I'm having right now is? The Mets seemingly can't beat the Braves. They seem to be unable to beat the Braves, and they're not beating them tonight. They're losing 7-3. They were winning 3-2 at one point.
They were winning 3-0 at one point.
Yeah. So they lost their fourth straight to the Braves last night. And they're losing again. They swept in Atlanta. They won. They somehow managed to beat the Phillies. That's great. They got swept by the Rays. This has been exactly what I thought it was going to be. I thought this was going to be a shit 2 weeks, and that's exactly what it's proving to be. They've been struggling since Kodai Senga went out. But how are they going to get out of this funk?
Well, they're about to be, I'm pretty sure, 1-11 in their last 12.
Yes.
How does that solve itself? I mean, because now at best you're just going to split with the Braves, right? Maybe they need to shake up the batting order. The pitching hasn't been... Frankie Montas actually pitched pretty good tonight. It all went to shit when they took him out. I don't know. I mean, I think it's the... You know, this happens in the dog days of summer, right? It's happening a month early. I wouldn't put too much into it. It's a long season. The Braves are just... You know, they're still under 500. They're just really... They understand what's at stake here. And I think this is a... This is a tribute to their manager explaining to them how the next couple days need to go. It's like, guys, we are under 500. This is the best team in our division. We need to beat their ass. So go out there and have at it, Haas. I mean, Strider was pitching out of his mind today. I haven't seen him pitch that well in a while. He still gave up 3 runs. But they just look, the Mets look lifeless. They do. The Beatty looks like shit. Their catcher, they had to send him down. The catcher they got can't hit. Wow. And Soto, you know, he's the best player in their team. Pete's playing very well. Lindor's gone back to the median. I think it's gonna take some dominating pitching, and I think they need to shake up the batting order. You got to try something different.
After number 4 in the batting order, there is no batting order. I still don't believe in Jeff McNeil.
The batting champ?
From 4 years ago?
He's playing center field tonight.
Good for him. Good for him. Show your versatility.
There's nobody else to play center field.
That's the problem. Siri's out. You know, they sent Acuna down because he can't hit. They sent Alvarez down because he can't hit. They're going to send Mauricio down because he can't hit. They're going to send Beatty down because he can't hit. You know, they had Jose Siri start the season. He can't hit.
If he's a good hitter, why isn't he hitting?
He doesn't have confidence, got an ugly girlfriend. Torrens can't hit. Oh, wait, somebody said that he would get exposed. Backup catchers get exposed. Who was that? Oh, point for me. Good job. You know, Hayden Sanger is the backup. That's all you need to know. So Torrens is going to play. So there you go. Marte has his moments, but I wouldn't say that, you know, he has won a job. Right, your bench is Tyrone Taylor, who plays. He's a solid player. Tyrone Taylor is a solid spot starter on a championship team. He's not an everyday center fielder. He's a very solid player. Jared Young is not a major leaguer. He should not be here. Travis Jankowski is a pinch runner, like that. You brought him in to be a pinch runner. So offensively, you got 4 guys. That's it. That is it. Winker's been out since, what, the end of April with that oblique? And he ain't coming back anytime soon. They sent him out on a rehab assignment. Yeah, we'll see what happens about that. You know, they're going to have to deal prospects. Met fans, if you want to contend this year, sorry. You're going to have to say goodbye to guys like Jet Williams. You're going to have to say goodbye to guys like Brandon Sproat. If you want players, if you want serious baseball players on this team, you're going to have to stop prospect hugging because prospects
trade
are suspects. Not happening.
Trade Pete Alonso.
Not happening. They're in second place. They're a game and a half out.
You're not going to re-sign him.
Says who?
They're not going to re-sign him. There's no way they're
going to.
Says who? Because he wants too much money. They're not going to pay him. You think you're going to pay him? How much do you think they're going to pay him?
They paid him this year.
For a year. For a year. How much are they going to pay Pete Alonso, Z? And how many years they're giving him? What is he, 30? He's going to be 33 now?
So, Pete Alonso...
What are you going to be?
Is 30.
He's going to be 31. How much are you giving 31-year-old Pete Alonso, who's having his best year as a Met?
You're looking at... I would go 4 years... 4 for $140 million.
Fuck you. He ain't taking that. He wants.
Yeah, he will.
He wants.
Nobody's gonna take him.
He wants. Yeah, I know nobody's gonna take him, but he, you know, he wants like $200 million.
He can want all he wants. He can want all he wants. Then you know what? If the offer was there, he should have taken it. Instead, Christian Walker beat him to it.
No.
Christian Walker set the floor.
Pete Alonso needs to listen to the motherfucking San Francisco Giants. Because they will give you your money. Go play in San Francisco. Now Devers is there. Get your ass over there and play.
And guess what? Righty in San Francisco, he's going to hit 140, and he's going to have 17 homers, and then they're going to DFA him, and he'll be back in fucking Queens.
He's not going to hit 140. He'll hit 270 in San Francisco. He's a righty.
He's
not
hitting 270 now.
Yes, he is. He's hitting 285. He's hitting 286. 286 with 18 home runs and 64 RBI. He has 85 hits on the season.
Yeah. That's not normal for Pete. 286 is not normal. He's in the 230 to 240 range.
Right.
You put him in San Francisco, that drops to about 200 to 190.
So you're,
it's that ballpark does not
so
play
you're,
well.
So if you're Pete, you're not going to San Francisco because you don't think you could hit there. Because the Giants are going to give him what he wants. They did it last time too. They're going to give him the money he's asking for. So you're going to go 2 years in a row. You're not going to take what they're offering you. And what you're going to take less money to play for the Mets?
I'm going to stay in a place where I can hit and hit well. I'm not going to go to a place where I'm going to tank my own numbers. It's like a pitcher going to Colorado. Why would I do that? Why would I do that?
You're going to San Francisco to win.
You're winning with the Mets. And you don't have to chase down the Dodgers. And you don't have to chase down the Padres.
You've got to beat the Braves and the Phillies,
who are not as good as the Padres and the Dodgers. It's more attainable. Give me some harder questions here. If anything, go play for the fucking Cubs. They're in first place.
All right,
so you're going to be in first place in a dog shit division.
So you're... Oh, yeah, that's true. The Cubs could call him.
You could be, top dog in a dog shit division.
I don't know if the Cubs will pay him everything the Giants will pay him. So your solution is to get rid of all your... Deplete the farm.
I didn't say deplete the farm. I said you're going to need to part with some of your top prospects. Whether that's Gilbert, whether that's Williams, whether that's Sproat. If you want to contend, you need more than four guys.
And you are going to trade those prospects for pitching, hitting, everything?
You need everything at this point because guess what?
Catching? You need a catcher.
You need a catcher. You still haven't solved second base, despite what Jeff McNeil has done. He's still a question mark. You still don't have a center fielder.
Where is the best place for Jeff McNeil? And don't say left bench.
Jeff McNeil... He's best suited, I think, to be the left fielder. And I think Brandon Nimmo would be best suited being in center. The problem is that Brandon Nimmo has that plantar fasciitis. And that shit never goes away.
No, he can't.
So he's a corner outfielder for the remainder of his career.
So Marte DH?
Marte's your DH. No, he's absolutely your DH. Soto's your right fielder. Marte's your DH. So they need to trade for a center fielder. Cedric Mullins might be available, most likely will be available. Worth a flyer. Catching, Salvador Perez is the best one on the market. If the Royals are out of it, I don't know what they would want for him. I'm not giving up top prospects for him. If it's Williams, Sproat, or Gilbert, we're hanging up here. No. You got a 37-year-old catcher, No. He's at the tail of his career. You're not getting my top prospect for an older catcher who's barely hanging on. Absolutely not. So I would trade top prospects if top talent was available. But if it's just also rans and kind of has-beens, no, that's not happening. That also, the lack of depth in the order also has an issue with their runners in scoring position problem. They're fucking terrible with runners in scoring position. I believe 26th in the league. That's not going to cut it if you have any aspirations of being the pennant winner. If you have any aspirations of winning the World Series, you cannot be 26th in the league with runners in scoring position. Pitching. It's all falling apart. It is all falling apart. The lauded lab. Right? Clay Holmes is close to 100 innings already. When does he hit the wall? And he hasn't pitched this much since his rookie year. He's going to hit the wall. It's inevitable. Blackburn is terrible. McGill is only good in April. Manaea just had an issue. He's been shut down. He has loose bodies in his elbow. He's done. They got to do something if they want to stay afloat. Because this shit's going to add up. This is how it starts. We've seen this before. And yes, I understand what you're saying. It's a June swoon. They could come back. Absolutely, they can come back around. They absolutely can. You're 100% right. We've seen it. You're never as good as when you're going great, and you're never as bad as when you're going poorly. I understand. But when you're the depths of your pitching, the depths of your offense, the depth of your defense, when your entire, the depth of your organization is being tested at this level, you gotta do something. You must do something.
Is your hair thinning or is your hairline receding? Scalp micropigmentation will fill in the areas where your hair is missing by creating a short buzz cut look. Micropigmentation is a non-invasive procedure that will create the illusion of hair follicles for 7 to 10 years. For people with alopecia, this could be a permanent fix. For people with scars on their scalp, this is a great way to camouflage a scar. Don't lose confidence or feel like you need to wear a hat wherever you go. Marquez Studio is located in the Bronx and is open for all your scalp micropigmentation needs. Consultations are free and appointments can be made any day of the week. Get your hairline back with scalp micropigmentation. The techs at Marquez Studio have over 30 years of hair cutting experience and can assist you with all of your questions. Call to schedule a consultation today, 646-221-8728. You can also visit them on Instagram at Bronx Marquez to see their gallery and view all their satisfied customers. Again, that is Marquez Studio, located in the Bronx, New York, 646-221-8728.
It's the In Route, where friends of the show get a special segment with us. Want to be part of the action? Want to be the newest member of the In Crowd? Well, you know what to do. Hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com, or slide in our DMs on IG at faderoutepodcast, or drop us a line on X at faderoutednz, and you could be next.
Joining us on the In Route tonight is comedian, media personality, and diehard sports fan, John Franklin. What's going on, John?
Yo, what's up, fellas? How are we doing?
He's got the Yankee shirt on. He's ready for this, man. This
making really good this morning, really good, and everything. Making really good radio here wearing a Yankee shirt that nobody's going to be able to see. They can only hear that I'm wearing it.
You've got a face interlocking and a shirt for radio. You've got a face and a shirt for radio, John.
Tell everybody I'm 6'4", and then just like lie about everything physical attribute wise.
6'4", golden locks.
Well, that's true. Wait, hold on. That's fine.
All right. So listen, we'll start you off with this. You've been active since 2020. So who were your comedy influencers growing up, and when did you know that this was something you wanted to do professionally?
Yeah, dude, great question. My favorite comedian ever is Norm Macdonald, and like I always loved his stuff, and like he's like my favorite to ever do it, just because like I'm sure you guys can get the gist of it by like my videos. Like I just like his roundabout way of doing something that's pretty down the middle. Like I don't like throwing a fastball for like a stupid pun to throw early, but like I like to change it up the way I like to do things, but like he always kind of set that tone. But like even like as I've gotten more like engulfed in internet culture, dude, like I love like guys like, you know, I think Nikki Cass is hysterical, and like it's hard to call him like an inspiration more than an influence, I'd say, like, because I mean, I don't know how old Nikki is, but like even one of my videos, he like commented and followed and DM'd me like how much he loved it.
Really?
Like, that's so cool. Like, you know, like the internet's a weird place, man. Like where shit like that just happens.
Very
strange.
And
you're just like, you never know who's going to see like your videos, who's going to like your videos. Like yesterday, my cousin and I are huge music fans. Like yesterday, like one of the guys from the Black Keys just followed me, and I was like, this is wild. Like,
wow.
But like to kind of like go back to the actual original question is like, I think it always evolves and changes. Like stand-up wise, it's always like Isaac McDonald, John Mulaney, Bill Burr, like love people like that. But then like, you guys know as well as anybody, like you get on the internet and then you have to find like different inspirations in different areas. And then you start seeing sketch comedy and try to get it more. Like you said, I'm a big sports guy, so find some hold in sports, and it kind of all comes together in a really cool melting pot. But yeah, that's really it.
Yeah, I mean, some of those guys you name, like Norm Macdonald's like the realest person ever, I feel like. Like yeah, some of his stuff on Weekend Update, and even listening to, I think he had a podcast, or he had a radio show one time. It's just hilarious. If you go back and you can listen to some of that stuff, it is just so gold. And talking about O.J. Simpson and all the things he's talking about.
Oh, my God.
Which is so great.
Yeah, like, he was awesome.
It's so timeless.
It was awesome. And, like, he even had, like, very short-lived, and one of my favorite shows ever is Norm Macdonald Has a Sports Show. Like, if you guys have never watched an episode of Norm Macdonald Has a Sports Show, like, one of the best, I mean, honest-to-God sports media shows ever. I still think, like, there's a place in this world for like a sports style Weekend Update like that. Like one of the best things ever. He had like this bit called "Oh Google," like it's like "Oh Google," and like he's like "Come on Google," and like the best part of it, he's like trying to search like what's the average salary of a WNBA player, and this like back in like I don't know like 2008. Like he would hit send, and like the search would be like, "Did you mean NBA?" And he'd be like, "Google." Like, come on.
That's great. So you were on season 4 of Netflix, The Circle. What was the experience like? And would you do it again, knowing what you know now?
Yeah. First of all, loved it. Really cool experience. Changed my life. Being in a room by yourself for that long is crazy, but and the people I still keep in touch with like that at work at Netflix and at Studio Lambert who put on The Circle know that I have nothing but like the most positive stuff to say about them and like what they've done for me in my career. So I would always do another reality show, but probably within reason. Like I like competition stuff. I don't need a dating show. I don't need shit like that. I mean, like, when I applied for The Circle, like it was unclear. Like I applied when I was hammered. And then, like, 9 months later, I got a call that they loved my audition. And it was very unclear what the audition was for. I didn't remember doing it. And I Googled. I said, yeah, like, great, perfect.
I'll be there.
I was like, sure, sounds good. And I checked, like, the footnote of the email, like, the signature. And it was for the Studio Lambert. So I Googled them and what they were casting at the time. And it was The Circle, a show called Naked Attraction, and a show called Too Hot to Handle. And I was like, in my head, I went through like three phases of thinking. I was like, it's probably The Circle because I know The Circle. I was like, but maybe I do look really good right now and it's too hot to handle. I was like, but I don't remember it, which means I was drunk. So Naked Attraction sounds like something naked, like Drunk John would be really into doing. So I was like, I don't know. This could go one of three ways. And then I watched the first season of Too Hot to Handle, and like the second guy in there was like 6'4" and like jacked. And I was like, hey,
that's not me. Yeah. Oh, we're going to be all right on this one. Oh, man. I was flying for like a bunch of jobs, and one of them called me and they were like, oh, could you come in? I'm like, yeah, I'll be there. And I get dressed and I go down there, and then on my way there, I'm like, shit, I don't even know like what this is for. Like, I don't remember what position this is. And yeah. I remember I showed up, I got to the office, and even the name was like, it was like a very basic business name. I didn't know. So, you know, kindly, I went up to their staff. What do you guys do here? Like, what is this? You know, what is the gist of this business? Because I really had no clue. I felt so. And she let me know. I was like, oh, okay, now I remember. All right, great. I got this. I didn't get the job, but it didn't matter. Like, you know, it was like,
is there any worse feeling in the world than getting like caught proverbially with your pants at your ankles? Like literally, have no.
I was so
no idea.
I was so desperate for a job. I was like, I'll be there. You meet 3 o'clock today. I'll be there at 3 o'clock today. No problem.
Yep.
And it wasn't even until I got like about a half hour away, I was like, what? Because this was before like I had a phone with like, you know, websites on it, and a, you know, sure, I could just look up the business name. No idea. And I was like, I'm gonna have to ask the receptionist. And I was like, let me wait for like it calm down in the lobby. And I just kindly was, what do you do here? What is this? Like, what's going on? And then she filled me in. I was like, okay, great. It's still like, it's still good.
I hope my girlfriend doesn't see this, but I'm gonna tell the story anyway because it's the same thing. Last year while I was single, and I was like just going out on, you know, you try to get on date, go on dates and like do shit like that. And I was hammered at a bar in Hoboken called Mulligan's, and they like, I got a girl's phone number, and my roommate will tell you firsthand, like when I was single, I was horrible at remembering people's names. And this girl put her name in my phone as just MG, and I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
And I didn't remember, and I didn't remember what she looked like. So both were bad. And I asked her to go on a date, like at this place in Hoboken, and I walked in, and she was like, I'm here. And I just kept going, I don't see you. And I was standing next to her for like 4 minutes. Like, directly next to her. I was like, hey.
Just kidding.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
There she is.
So safe to say that did not work out.
Jocker. Well, you know, you've already done an Amazon special. You're currently on a U.S. tour performing in the Midwest and the West Coast. So what are your long-term career goals here? TV, movies, just want to keep doing stand-up? What's the plan?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a bit of everything. I don't think – I say this all the time to my friends, like especially my friends who are comedians get mad at me for it, but I don't want to do stand-up my whole life. I love stand-up. I love being on stage, and it's super fun. But like, it's just a tough life. It's like a tough constant. But I love writing. And like, I think my goal, like, I think my dream, like, I've made it scenario, or like, I've done what I want to do is like write something that I'm in, like write a show or write a movie or like whatever that could look like. That would be the goal. Now, like, you guys know I'm a big sports guy. So
yeah.
there's also the side of me that if I was making my living, like being a voice on The Fan or doing something like that, you know, that I think with me, and I do appreciate that we grow, we're up in a generation that's, you're capable of doing things like this in, I want to do everything, dude. Like, the internet is a great resource and it gives you a lot of opportunity. Now, with that double-edged sword is it sometimes gives opportunity to people that might not deserve it, but then I always believe the cream rises to the top, and like good people who treat people right and like work really hard end up getting the good thing. So I'm still chopping the wood, you know, I'm 28 trying to figure things out, and I'm hoping that maybe
you know, we end up writing a show, or we end up on radio, or we end up being like a go-to on-camera person for some media-related thing. But until then, keep churning out the videos, because I friggin' love doing them. They're super fun. Like, I love making people laugh. I love walking around and having people be like, holy shit, like, I love your stuff. And hopefully that's like just the next step in like a lot of wider dreams, but not going to stop trying, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the name of the game is content, right? Just start, you know, keep spilling out content, and then also, yeah, keep writing. I mean, that's, you should write every day, every idea that comes into your head, write it down. I think the coolest thing ever, I once heard a guy at an award show, he won, I forget what he won for, but he was like, I just love the fact that my job is to make people laugh and to make people happy. He's like, so when it's all over and when I go to heaven or wherever I go after this next, what did you do with your life? It was like, my job was to make people laugh and make people happy. And I always thought that was like the best answer
ever. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Like I say all the time, like one of the best parts of my life now, because, you know, when I was in college, like I didn't think, I was like, all right, now time to get on social media and make funny videos. Like, I didn't think that was like what I was going to do. I went to school for journalism. Like, I wanted to be like the next Al Michaels. And like,
yeah.
Then I end up making these videos that just work. But I say to people all the time, like, I think social media can be fuzzy, where, you know, like, people like to think that they have to have an opinion on everything, and they have, like, everything on social media has to be a reason for something. Like, there's a reason you posted this, because you wanted people to do this. And it's like, I just want to offer an escape to people. Like, fucking, I watched Devin Williams suck for the first half of this baseball season, and like, he changed the beard rule for the Yankees. Like, I'm gonna say something about that, and it, like, it means nothing to the political climate of the world. Like, I'm not saying you're being like, and go vote. Like, I'm like, no, I just think Devin Williams like deserves to know like what I think about him. Like, I just think like that's what I want social media to do for people, and like, I want to offer that escape and like make people laugh and have people view things a little differently, just because I try to do things a little differently.
Right.
100%. Like, that's the way to, you know, everybody has their niche. You have to just find where you fit in, find your role, and just kind of like take it. I mean, look at Joe Rogan. Like, Joe Rogan's like the hugest, he's like the podcast godfather, right? He's what everybody wants to do. Started as a stand-up comedian, ended up on news radio, and then he was on Fear Factor before he finally got his own
fighting
thing.
People on, like, Fear Factor.
Yeah, dude. Man.
Like, the journey is so interesting for anybody who does shit like this. Like, you just start thinking, who knows where this is going to go. And then the next thing you know, like, a couple million views later, you have opportunities you never even dreamed of having. Like, Joe Rogan's like a really good example, because talk about a guy who had a million lives in media before figuring out exactly what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
But you just really never know. Like, you never know what's going to be the thing that does it for you, or what's going to be the change. Like, I love stand-up, but like, stand-up isn't what's paying my bills. You know what I'm talking about? Like, yeah. You just got to keep doing the things that you love, and sooner or later the world like rewards you for it. Yeah,
that's right. It all falls into place.
Check out part two of our interview with John Franklin later this week.
Your favorite podcast has its own merch line now. Go to the Fade Store with DNZ.com today and check out our releases in apparel, accessories, drinkware, and more. Ever wanted an Alleged Superstar t-shirt? We got those. You want some yoga pants? We got those too. And we're not done yet. We have a lot of exciting collaborations and new products on the way. But check out what we have now at the Fade Store with DNZ.com. That's the Fade Store with DNZ. Who is the best of the worst this week in sports? The Fade Store presents the Alleged Superstar of the Week Award.
All right, boys and girls, you know what time it is. It's time for the Alleged Superstar of the Week. You know how it goes. We put up a poll on our X account at FadeRouteDNZ and our Instagram poll at FadeRoutePodcast. And you vote, and you vote, and you vote, and you vote. The winner of said vote gets a shout out on this year's show, takes on the coveted ass trophy. And do you know who took home the coveted ass trophy this week, D?
I don't.
That would be Shador Sanders.
Oof.
Getting cited twice for driving 101 in a 55. Now, the... the meme of the week. The meme of the week. He was doing 144 when he was supposed to go in the first round. There you go. But that was last week. This is this week. Who are your nominees for Legislative Star of the Week, D?
All right, first up, I've got New York native. I'm going to probably butcher his name, but it's Jameer Candelario from Reds. Nope. Halfway into his $45 million deal, he has been DFA'd. Ew. He's hitting 113. He's slashing 113, 198, and 213. He started 22 games for the Reds until landing on the injured list with a lumbar spine strain in late April, and now he is unemployed. The Reds are chalking this up to sunk costs, but man, that's a hard one to swallow. So, Jameer Candelario, you are my Legend Superstar of the Week. Number two is Wander Franco. Wander Franco, the most top-rated prospect in the Rays organization, will be arraigned on Thursday and will be likely going to jail for around 5 years for sexual misconduct with minors. Wander Franco, you are my alleged superstar of the week. And number one, it's Tyrese Halliburton. You can't play 3 games on a strained calf, my friend. You have now lost your championship for your team. You have also will miss all of next year. I admire your bravery. I admire your courage. But I think this could have been handled a lot better. Tyrese Halliburton, you are my alleged superstar of the week. What do you got, Z?
I mean, they're all bad. I mean, Jameer Candelario is fucking awful. But what were they thinking giving him that contract? That's what I would like to know. So, I gotta start with the Mets. Like, are you fucking kidding me? 1-10 in their last 11. Get the hell out of here with that shit. Absolutely brutal. Absolutely brutal. Your pitching is trash right now. Your offense can't hit. You had to send down Alvarez. You have guys who are barely hanging on, once top prospects, that don't even look like they're just basura right now.
Basura.
Complete and utter basura.
They're gonna be 1-11. It's they're not coming back in this game.
No, they're gonna be 1-11. They're absolutely gonna be 1-11 in their last 12. And yeah, it's not great. It is not great whatsoever. And seemingly no end in sight because Sean Manaea has loose bodies in his elbow. So there you go. There's that. So
Frankie Montas pitched good today, though.
Yeah, okay. That's great.
He was getting fucking tanked in AAA.
That's why I wasn't overreacting. People were like, you know, like George last week was, you know, talking about how he's getting crushed. Like, he's just trying to work his way back into shape. If he was getting lit up tonight by the Braves, then I would be concerned. But they need him to pitch like he pitched on the Oakland A's before the Yankees got him. That's what they need. They need Oakland A. Oakland A. Not West Sacramento A. They need Oakland A. Frankie Montas to come out there and deliver the goods. Paul Blackburn, hide your glove. I don't want to see you ever again. Waskar Brazaban, third of an inning, 3 runs.
Did Blackburn like, you're for the Twins at one point? I feel like
different
did.
Blackburn. That was Nick Blackburn. He got hit in the face with a line drive. That's the only reason why I remember. Paul Blackburn, another former A. Basically, just raid the A's. Go get Severino back. Like, just anybody who was a halfway decent player at one point, just take them off the A's. But the Mets are hot garbage right now. And they got to figure something out because The Braves are catching up. That's all I'm going to say. The Braves are catching up and the Phillies are pulling away. If they keep this up. New York Mets, you are my alleged superstar of the week. Number two, the New York Yankees. 3-7 in their last 10. My God.
Studs.
It's been a brutal, brutal stretch for New York baseball. Now, they're tied with the Reds tonight. It is 3-3 in the top of the 11th inning. The Yankees just took the lead. So there's a chance. So you're saying there's a chance that they can win tonight. We shall see. But the bullpen hasn't been great. Kind of got to work Weaver back in. He hasn't been... Loiza gave up a third of an inning, gave up three runs. Weaver looked like dog shit the other night.
Basura.
Yeah. I have more confidence in Weaver than I have in some of the other guys, like Dickie Lovelady on the Mets. Yes, there's a guy named Dickie Lovelady on the Mets. If he's not wearing number 69, is it a disservice?
He's not. I think he's 50-something.
God damn it. You had one job. Give Dickie Lovelady 69. That's all you need to do. As the clubhouse guy, you have failed. You have failed, failed, failed. Another thing on the list for the Mets. God damn it. You had one job. Complete the joke. And you couldn't get that done. Yankees have been awful as well. We'll see. Maybe they win tonight. Maybe they actually do. Yankees, you are my alleged superstar of the week. We have breaking news before I move to my third one. Kyrie Irving re-upping with the Mavericks.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. So he declined his option and he signed back on for 3 years.
Well played. Well played.
Yeah. Well done. My third alleged superstar nominee is former UFC heavyweight champion John Bones Jones. Was scheduled to fight contender Tom Aspinall. Decided to up and retire instead. At a press conference, UFC head honcho Dana White said, John Jones is retired, Tom Aspinall is the UFC champion. Yeah. Okay. That's fine, I suppose. Like, it's kind of gutless, but hey, whatever. Like, you do you. Aspinall said a year ago, he said, I'm going to make him give me the belt without even having a fight. And he was right. So good on Tom Aspinall. But there's another reason why John Jones retired. He's in the legal trouble again. He fled the scene of an accident. Can he just not drive? Lest we forget he was involved in a fatal hit and run. Can we just take away John Jones's license, please? Can we do that? For the safety of the people on the road? Probably a good idea. John Jones, you are my alleged superstar of the week. I think we said our piece. Go to our X account at FadeRouteDNZ. Go to our Instagram poll at FadeRoutePodcast and vote. And vote and vote and vote. And for our nominees.
You're better than that. Just do better. Just do better.
This has been the Fade Route with DNZ. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Catch our podcast on Wednesday nights on Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to your podcast. So until next time, stay fade, everyone.
Time for us to run the go route. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of our podcast. If you liked what you heard and you want to hear more, be sure to like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Leave us a review, rate us 5 stars, turn on subscription notifications, and share on social media. Tell your friends and spread the word.